Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe on all your podcast platforms and on YouTube. Give the old like and thumbs up there as well. Joining me today, Eric Kareen of The Athletic. Sir, how are you? You've been in playoff mode for a while now with all the content you've been throwing out there.
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks. Excited to watch the finals. Excited to see which way that goes. Always sort of thinking about what it says about what the Raptors are up to or might be up to in a month. And exciting times.
Well, apparently it's an OG and an OB trade. That's what the rumor is, at least. But we'll get to that in a second. But on the finals, Celtics, Warriors, what are your thoughts? I guess your thoughts and then pick.
Yeah, so I don't have like a strong feeling either way. Like, I think if I had to pick which team is slightly more talented, which team is better, I'd probably say the Celtics. I think they're probably the best team in the league. But with a few of the injury situations, particularly to Marcus Smart and Robert Williams, seeming like their issues and that just, you know, hampers them defensively more than anything. They'll still be very, very good defensively, but obviously Golden State is a different type of offensive team. And then you've got just the experience, but also, as I said, the unique style in which Golden State plays that is very, very different to what the Celtics have seen in, frankly, sort of three slugfest Eastern Conference-y types. So, I mean, especially the last two, Miami and Milwaukee, very, you know, seven-game series, but, you know, slow-paced most of the time, rock fight type things. And Golden State's just going to come at you with that sort of random barrage of shot creation. Because of all of that, I'm taking Warriors in seven, but like picking against the team that I sort of think is better doesn't sit right with me. Yeah. So I'm hedging all over the place here, which is sort of my nature, I guess. I'll pick Warriors in seven very hesitantly.
Yeah, I gotcha. I was going with Warriors in six, and this is coming down to like half court offense for me. And you mentioned Marcus Smart. He's going to be so important when it comes to that high pick and roll and screen navigation. It's like, it's him, Derek White, and other than them too, it gets kind of dicey to some degree because of Steph's nature, because of how good he is, and Al Horford, as good as he is, he's a bit seasoned. So how high does he come to the level? Does he drop? Obviously don't want to drop. And then like, what's going to be happening? Because like the bigs on the Warriors, Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, like they're just so good at slipping and creating those like little mismatches around the paint. And I just find that half court offense is going to be just a smidge better, even though defensively, I mean, Celtics are better, but the Warriors aren't too bad themselves.
It's like, you know, it's the most beautiful offense out there right now versus the best defense out there. And as I said, like the injuries maybe take away the ceiling of that Boston defense a little bit, but still like that side of the ball, I mean, these are two great, great teams and it will all be very interesting, but that side of the ball particularly will be fascinating to watch.
And that Celtics gauntlet they went through, that's so many good teams that they've gone through at this point. And I just can't imagine how their bodies are feeling after going through those kinds of slugfests, rock fights, whatever you want to call them.
I at least they get the three off days in between, but you know, if you compare the two roads, Golden State surely is more set up to be able to withstand a long series, even if the finals is more has more off days than most series up to this point.
Let's go down this very slippery road with OG and Anobi trade rumors, because I would imagine, I mean, I've seen it online, that people are just like, what? OG and Anobi? are you kidding me? And I saw that headline that was from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. He's the one who's reporting that there are a few teams that have inquired about OG Anunoby, and they're just deciding to put out the rumor that, you know what, he's dissatisfied. We have no proof. We just kind of feel like that's going to be the case because he's very good and there's not enough shot attempts for him. So that's kind of where we're at, that his name's around the NBA a lot and teams are fishing because he's very good and he's on a great contract. So I guess, do you really buy into these rumors? Do you think that there's any validity to it? Or is it just kind of teams fishing because they've mismanaged their franchises and they need bigger wings?
Well, do I buy that there, like, is there some truth in that story? Sure. Like, I think if I'm OG Anunoby and I come into last year, this past season, I should say, as sort of one of the three guys who've been there and is going to take a bigger part of the leadership committee and by extension of that, really the offense. Let's just say it. He'll have a bigger role in the offense. And he did. Like, I don't have the usage percentages in front of me, but like it was an all-time high usage percentage. But when you look at where he was at before the Pascal Siakam came back after 9 games and where he was for the rest of the year, understandably, he had like a pretty high usage rate in those first 9 games and it went down. And you know what else made it go down? A series of injuries. And, you know, I feel bad calling him injury prone because most of the injuries have nothing to do with one another. You know, you've got a thumb injury, you've got the knee surgery that started his career, you've got, you know, his face seems to be a magnet for elbows and, you know, Kawhi Leonard's hands and
along with Ken Burch, yes.
Yeah. So at some point though, you know, he missed 30 games this year, I believe the number was. And when you're out that long, it allows a Scottie Barnes to take a bigger part of the offense. It allows Pascal Siakam to take a bigger part of the offense, even though his, you know, usage was down from certainly 2 years ago. I'm not sure about last year. And Siakam was awesome. So do I think like OG Anunoby is wildly dissatisfied about his lot in Toronto? No. Do I think like he thought he might take a bigger step last year than he ended up taking and sort of, you know, in the back of his head or in the back of his agency's head, it's like, where is this going? Is there room for him to grow into the player he wants to become? I'm sure those conversations are had because it'd be irresponsible of a player agency and, you know, to not talk about it with the player because, you know, in the modern CBA with 4 or 5 year contracts being the max, like you're never that far out from having to negotiate your next contract. Saying that, I think the bigger part, and it was sort of hinted at in the article, is with each playoffs, we're seeing the more guys between 6'6 and 6'10 who can defend across positions, who can shoot a lot, who are, you know, even if they're not the world best creators, they can attack a closeout. Yep. Those guys, I mean, that's the whole basis of what the Raptors are doing. And you almost can't have too many of those guys. And so if you're another team around the league and you're like, we only have one of those guys, or we don't really have any of those guys.
Yeah.
The Raptors who have Pascal Siakam, who have Scottie Barnes, if, you know, once he develops a shot, you have OG Anunoby and you have some of, you know, their prospects who, like, who knows what Precious Achiuwa becomes, but like you see the Raptors overflowing relative to the rest of the league with those types of players. And you think about a scenario, and I know we'll talk about this later, in which they're eventually going to have to pay all those guys or pay them more than they're currently paying. It's like, oh, I wonder if we can pluck maybe the one who they're least attracted or least attached to at this very moment. Not unlike what happened with Pascal Siakam last year, although I wouldn't say to the same degree because Pascal Siakam's stock had like clearly reached a low point. Whereas I'm not sure that's true about OG Anunoby. He just hasn't really established the highs of Pascal Siakam yet.
Yeah, it's going to come down to some degree with just how teams are going to value OG Anunoby and what he's going to become. Because I tweeted this a few weeks ago and I was watching the Mavericks and Warriors series. I was like, man, they could really use a person like OG Anunoby. Not that every team could use a person like him, but when you have like players like Luka Doncic or Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell, who are just so isolation heavy. You need players like OG to be on your wing who can just attack closeouts, not just shoot, but actually, you know, create their own shot to some degree. And that's kind of where this is going to end up, is how much do the Raptors value him? And also, is he okay with kind of being in a role where he's one of three instead of maybe having a role where he has a bigger part of the offense? It's like there's a degree of ego checking that comes with being a person who's on the Raptors, because they have so much talent in the starting lineup. I mean, because they have so much talent and so many players that could actually have some value and, you know, get more shot attempts on a different team. Just like Tyler Hero's pointing out the other day, he's like, yeah, I'd like to be a starter. I've been off the bench for a few years now. I'm not saying that that's what OG is thinking, because I mean, I'm not, who am I to say that? But that does get to a point where some players are finding themselves like, I just want more for myself. And if OG wants a bigger contract, if he wants to be, get inch himself closer to being a max player, he probably has to have a more solidified role in an offense.
Yeah, you want, and you like, you want your players to have ambition, sure, right? And like, ultimately, there is a happy middle ground between individual ambition and team goals. And, you know, the contract I always, not the contract, just the situation I always think about was, you know, Jeremy Grant a few years ago, where Denver picks him up in a trade. It's like, oh, this guy's the perfect, you know, piece for what Denver's doing. Like, they, you have this defender who's like 3-point percentage is creeping up, and he ends up leaving, not for more money, but because he saw a bigger offensive role. Does OG Anunoby want that? Like, is he willing to, you know, potentially, I don't think we've seen his ceiling, but potentially take the competitiveness hit in order to establish that sort of bigger role? I'm not sure he's doing that equation, because I'm sure most of these guys think, if I'm in a bigger role, my team's going to succeed because I'm that good. Because if you don't think like that, it's pretty hard to make it to the NBA, and it's pretty hard to make it to being a very good and valuable player in the NBA. But, you know, I like to say that reporters don't know these guys, you know. I'm sure people who covered Jeremy Grant very closely didn't necessarily know that that's what Jeremy Grant wanted. That I can't say that this is what OG Anunoby wants in a year or two, whenever he becomes a free agent, but he'll have to come to grips with that. Meanwhile, like, he's always been a really good teammate for on this team. You know, he certainly excels in the role he's in. I think the Raptors have been cognizant of trying to get him a bigger slice of the pie as the years have gone on. Like, he was the lowest usage of starters when he started out. He was starting, but he was like strictly a 3-and-D guy. And like, yeah, his role hasn't gone from, you know, fifth option to first option, but it's gone from 5 to 3.5 to 3 and
to one at one point.
And to the stuff he's doing, it's gone from, okay, you're taking threes. Okay, now you're attacking closeouts. Okay, now you can isolate if you want. Oh, we're going to put you in the post. We trust you to make passes out of the post. Like, they're giving him more leeway. It's just, they're not giving the, like, he doesn't have the carte blanche of somebody closer to Siakam. And we'll see how much he wants that. But for now, I think it would take an awful lot to pry him from the Raptors.
I kind of agree with that too. I think a player that would be involved in a OG Anunoby trade would probably be a player where a Raptor fan might be like, okay, OG, thank you so much for your service. We're so happy that we were able to have you for a few years, but now it's time to go, because we got this player, someone who's going to put them on a different echelon in the Eastern Conference, and they can like truly join that upper tier with like on Miami and Milwaukee and so forth. That's the only scenario where I could see it happening. And that's like a trade where, I mean, that's hard to do. Those aren't easy trades to do. And also, Messiah's talked so much about patience with their core. I don't know if next season is the year, and we're going to get to this in a second, but is next year the year where they do that? It seems a little bit premature based off of what we saw this past season, where they're very good. They exceed expectations. But are you confident that they're a championship team come next year? I'm not really sure, because we didn't see enough of a sample size. They were injured the whole year.
Yeah. And, you know, I usually say bet against big trades happening. Like, trades are just so hard to make work in the NBA, and we spend so much time talking about them, and like, obviously they happen quite a bit in the off season, but you know, they're these unwieldy things. And I think you're right. Like, I think the Raptors, a lot of the trades that are being thrown out there are for like a nice piece and a lottery pick, which makes sense if all you're doing is thinking about the future. I mean, I wouldn't say I would do them necessarily, but they make sense for a team that's like doing its future accounting, that's like setting its books up to make sense in the long term, that isn't really, doesn't really have its foot on the pedal. And while I don't think the Raptors are going to be all in unless like the exact perfect deal comes along, I still think like they want to be, they don't want to take a step back. They want to be back in the top six and get these guys more experience and maybe be able to advance to the second round. And, you know, maybe with another year together, they're better than you think, because, you know, I just wrote this the other day, like, we've had two finalists in, we've had one finalist in each of the last 2 years. They had I think the Celtics had the 14th lowest or most likely odds to make the finals this year. And the year before that, the Suns had the 13th. Like, we're not in the like, oh, there's only four teams who could win the title now, or there's only, you know, two teams from each conference who can be in the finals now. Like, I think, and there's no guarantee this continues, but there seems to be a little more parity in a league that's not known for it. So I don't think the Raptors are going to willingly take themselves out of the mix in this era in which, you know, advancement seems more possible than in, you know, LeBron and the, you know, Golden State super teams peak era.
And the NBA is working really hard to make sure those don't happen anymore. They're trying to the best of their abilities with the different implications on the cap. On OG, just for a second, there was a 13-game stretch earlier on the season when Pascal Siakam was out. He averaged 21 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 46% from the field and 40% from three. His contract, you mentioned earlier, he's under contract for 2 more seasons, and then he has a player option, which he will certainly opt out of, because why wouldn't he? Just to name a name, because I think this name keeps on coming, and this team is about to obviously make some pretty drastic moves because they're kind of in a state of limbo. The Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert, once and for all, do you see a fit with the Toronto Raptors? Do you think Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster are looking at a chalkboard and they're just like, we got to find a way to get Rudy Gobert because he's going to help us that much? Or is it just like, no, because he just doesn't fit?
I don't think like either is necessarily right. Like, I think if you can do a 1-for-1 OG for Rudy Gobert trade, the Raptors would probably do that. You can't do it. The money doesn't work. Rudy Gobert is on a giant deal. OG Anunoby is making $18 or $19 million a year. Basically, the only way it works is you're throwing in Gary Trent. Are the Jazz going to do that for OG? Are they going to trade Rudy Gobert for OG and Gary Trent? Like, I don't think so. Like, I think Rudy Gobert holds more value to them. Then you're throwing in, okay, a first round pick. Let's say it's top 10 protected. Now you're moving away from something the Raptors are doing. So like, this is why I say always bet against a trade, because like, that's, I mean, that's two starters for a center who is like great defense. I mean, he's probably going to make the Hall of Fame, I would say, you know, one of the greatest defenders of all time, but he has an onerous contract that sort of locks you into a specific way of playing. And I think the Raptors, when it comes down to it, want to be able to play multiple ways. Like, they're going with this long and strong, you know, Project 6-8, as I jokingly called it a bit ago.
Yeah.
But I don't think they need to stay there. I don't think they're like philosophically hell bent on staying there. But in terms of like making the talent trade-off and the future trade-off work, I just think, you know, a trade based around OG Anunoby and Rudy Gobert is unlikely to happen from both sides because of what else it would entail, basically.
Yeah. And you mentioned the money, and that's what kind of gets me about a Rudy Gobert trade, because while he is like a pit bull on the defensive end, he is truly a chihuahua on the offensive end. Like, he just doesn't have that force when it comes to his offensive game, unfortunately. And it makes it really hard to, you know, shell out that kind of money for a $37 million player. Like, you really want the full package with him, and he simply is not. He makes like, you know, $8 million more than Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure that doesn't help their relationship in anyways. But also with the way the NBA is trending and these last four teams are in the conference finals and now the finals, you see their best lineups. It is around like kind of what the Raptors are trying to do. And if you are kind of ahead of the curve in that way, and you don't really know where the NBA is going to be going in 3-4 years, but right now you are in the thick of it with just in terms of having the personnel to play a certain way, it seems irresponsible to just abandon it when you kind of built something and there's so much room for growth from pretty much every player within this like top six.
Yeah. I think like the thing you said that's absolutely true is we don't know if the league will stay this way, yeah. But I think one thing I'm comfortable saying is the league is going to continue to value guys who can play in space. And that goes for both ends. It's guys who can shoot far out, but it's also guys who can defend far out. And there are bigs who can do that well enough or really well, and Gobert's fine. Like, he's a fine perimeter defender. He can handle a switch.
Sure.
But that's not his specialty. You really do want him dropping back and protecting the rim. But more than that, like you said, he's a, you know, good screener, great lob threat, but he's not bringing much more to the table than that. And so giving up a player who can play in space on both ends, even if he's not as good at what he does as Gobert is, and I think that's sort of undeniable. Gobert is one of the best in the world at what he does. But even if Anunoby is not that good, but giving up that guy plus additional assets, it's just a hard thing to make work logically for the Raptors. And that's before you get into the money of it all.
Yeah. There are teams that make sense for Rudy Gobert. I think Atlanta Hawks, if they didn't have a Clint Capella or whatever they want to do with that, New York Knicks. I can see just teams that have a lot of guard depth, but not necessarily, you know, a center that they can just funnel players into, and just, he can be a brick wall. So he'll find a match. I think something big is going to be happening in Utah, but with OG Anunoby, it would be very surprising to see a move happen, just because if you read, like, sometimes you just have to listen to Masai's words, and at his end of season press conference, between him saying correct sarcastically a couple of times, I think he said it once to you as well, and it was funny, nothing against you, but just Masai was in a mood at that time and he decided to give you a little correct and dot dot dot. However, he has said many times that he's very devoted to this Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby core. He wants to probably give him a shot, just like he gave DeMar, Kyle, and Dwayne Casey a shot. And it's too early in that project to make any decisions, because this takes time. And yeah, I just don't think. Yeah,
he wants to give him the shot until the perfect opportunity comes along to not. You know, like if the perfect trade comes along right now for his purposes, and that's probably something that vaults them into title contest, or at least, you know, conference final contention, what without completely sandbagging the future, like, I'm sure he would do that. Like, he's not that attached to giving these players a shot, but
yeah,
like the Kawhi Leonard trade was a, you know, if that had been available 2 years before it was, Masai Ujiri would have made it then, right? Like it's, there wasn't anything magic about when Masai Ujiri made the Kawhi Leonard trade, except that it was, you know, the time when it was available for the reasons that we all understand that it was available. So yes, I think the reason Masai Ujiri says, you know, I'm committed to giving this core a chance is because he can see the big picture, and it's unlikely that something is out there to his liking that will both, you know, give them more of a chance right now while not, you know, ruining the long-term outlook for this team. So that's what's behind those words. And you know, I would take him at face value.
Well, since OG Anunoby is staying, let's look at his development. I asked you to name two things that you think would really help OG Anunoby work on this off season, and that could help him be a bigger asset next season. Now, I didn't actually say this to you, but it's kind of twofold. It's like, what things could he do that would help the Raptors? And then what could he do that would help his personal game? But however you decide to approach it, proceed, sir.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is probably his handle. I say this for almost everybody.
It's true on the Raptors.
I mean, for the Raptors, it's always who can handle and who can shoot. Do those two things. But OG's obviously pretty good in terms of being able to shoot when his finger isn't, you know, torn apart, or broken, I should say. But, you know, if he's able to handle, you know, the Raptors don't do a ton of pick and roll, but if he's able to eat up some of those pick and roll possessions as more of a handler more often than a screener, like I think that makes the Raptors more dangerous. But it also, you know, is probably the biggest thing that's keeping his individual usage down, is like, he's not really that guy who is handling in those situations. They use Siakam or they use Van Vliet. Barnes isn't really there yet, but I mean, that would be at the top of my list for Scottie Barnes too, is like, you know, you want to be able to handle in the pick and roll. So I think like the tighter you can make your handle, the better it's going to, or the more it's going to allow you to do really offensively. Sure. Because like he's shown, like, not that his post game is polished, but he's shown he can bully guys who are smaller down there. He's shown that he can make passes from there. It's really the creating in traffic and in tight spaces that is more of a question, and where the Raptors understandably trust other players a bit more. And you know, the Raptors half court offense is the obvious weak point, big picture, of this group. And if all of a sudden you have another guy who's an average to above average pick and roll handler, you know, that goes a long way to making them less predictable and therefore more dangerous. Because I don't think right now, and you know, Scottie Barnes can prove me wrong, but like right now, this isn't a team that's heading toward 30% usage for any single player. Sure. This is going to be a by committee offense, and you just don't want it to necessarily be as isolation and dependent and mismatch dependent, even though the playoffs often play out like that, as it sometimes was during the season. So I think that's one thing. The other thing, and I don't know how much the injuries had to do with this, I thought Anunoby had a, compared to expectations, a disappointing defensive year. I think at his best, he still showed that he can be very, very good on that end, but he still hasn't put together that, and this it goes along with the injuries, and you know, if you're not playing 70 games, it's tough to create this reputation, but he hasn't put together that season where, okay, he's knocking in threes, he's scoring 15 points a game, and oh yeah, he's like a no doubt in the all defense conversation. And he wasn't in the all defense conversation this year. I don't think he was the most deserving Raptor to be in the all defense conversation. And that's not only because of games played. Like, I think he was just not as strong and not as agile on that end. And that's not to still say, like, he was good. He's just not like consistently changing games good. And sure. I think he can get there. I think he's shown in spurts that he is that guy. And so how do you improve that? Like you get healthy, you do all the agility work that you can possibly do. And that's got to make for a boring day at the gym. You know, OG is nothing if not strong and capable in that sense. So those would be the two things. And I think it's pretty obvious how that fits into the Raptors' big term or sort of, you know, how they want to play next season.
Yeah. And I think something Pascal Siakam, I think, struggled a little bit with when he took on this role as more of a number one option and his usage went through the roof and so forth, is pacing yourself through an NBA game can be really difficult. And sometimes you just want to conserve your energy for the fourth quarter because that's coming around the corner. And with the Raptors' play style, or at least this season, where they're playing their starters 41 minutes, 42, 43, it's like maybe he's getting tired. Maybe he's trying to pace himself. There's like so many factors involved with this. And then, yes, the injuries. It's this conditioning up to snuff because of, you know, entering the lineup and then going out. And then how do his thighs feel? Are they burning in the fourth quarter? Like, I'm sure these things were coming up for him. Everything you talked about, I absolutely agree with. A person that I compare him with, or I'd like actually OG to watch some film on, it would be Jimmy Butler. Now, I'm not saying that OG and Jimmy are the same kind of players or anything like that. Like, OG is 1 inch taller. They're a similar weight. But when I look at Jimmy, and you mentioned the handle, and I look at Jimmy as a person who isn't necessarily going to cross you up, but he's very confident with the ball in his hands. And he does everything with a very strong purpose. There's no wasted dribbles. He's always baiting you into something or luring you into something that he wants to do. And I found that OG sometimes, especially with his post game, he does a lot of unnecessarily dribbling. And I mean, look at James Harden in some of those Houston Rockets series where, you know, Golden State Warriors are just like, we're just going to tire him out and see if he can really keep up in the fourth quarter. Like, dribbling is tiring. It's taxing on the body. And just being a little bit more confident with his decision-making and more decisive, I think, would really help him. And that's something that Jimmy, again, is so good at when it comes to his post game as well. It's we can get into the post game in a second, but just your thoughts on the Jimmy Butler comparison.
Yeah, it makes sense. Not in that they're built the exact same way, but no. They both obviously have that strength. And OG's strength, you know, he's for his size, he's got to be one of the stronger guys in the league. So you don't really need to be using a ton of deception in order to, you shouldn't necessarily need to use a ton of deception in order to get yourself open. So, you know, to be more decisive, to be a bit more efficient when you do get the ball. And beyond that, it's just also about getting the defense moving, right? Like, if you're spending time dribbling, the defense is stationary and set. And you don't want, you know, not every offense is going to be the 0.5 Spurs or anything like that, but you don't always want the defense to be able to think how, okay, the drive is coming here and this is how we're going to react. And we know exactly which way we're pinballing if we're sending help. A bit more decisiveness and a bit more confidence, like not only in his handles I mentioned, but in his strength, because there aren't many guys who should be able to stop him from getting at least to a comfortable shot. Like, you can't always get right to the rim. Like, that's, you know, one of my least favorite, you know, sort of fan things. It's like, why isn't he driving? Like, why is it? people are trying to stop him. It's not just the guy in front of him. But like, you can get those two steps and send your defender back on his heels and be able to rise up for, you know, a 14 footer. Or be able to get the help to commit sooner than it's ready. And, you know, all of the helpers haven't even thought about the scenario. Then you're playing, you know, a style that's going to benefit you and the whole team. And that's just the way the Raptors didn't play very often this year. And just because, I just wrote about sort of, you know, this article that will come out on Monday, but I wrote about their biggest skill needs. Like, they lack secondary playmaking and they lack shooting. Like, now, you know, one affects two and two affects one. It's hard to know, you know, it's a chicken and egg situation. But if you don't have a lot of that, it's hard to play side to side to side. So, you know, the two things to be able to do that is, you know, you're confident when the ball swung to you, you can make a shot, and you're confident when the ball swung to you, you can take a few dribbles and make the next play. And OG Anunoby maybe a little too often, and like, we're being pretty critical about a player I really like, but this is, I guess
we're in the media. This is how it is,
and it's in the context of, like, you know, maybe OG Anunoby wants a bit of a bigger role, and how can he get there? Well, these are some of the ways, and I think
here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Point about Butler, but, you know, not even to name specific names, but, you know, leveraging that power is definitely a good one.
And kind of sticking on the Jimmy Butler thing, because there was this one other thing that I love about Jimmy Butler, and it's his post game. And it's so unheralded because of the ways that he's able to create space and to find like little avenues to just get his shot off. And now the jumping ability is something that's very different between the two players. But Jimmy is also a very strong human being, and he has a way of using his strength to spin off his defender or to not create that contact where he's necessarily bully balling him, but he's able to lure them into ways where they're uncomfortable, where he gets them on their heels, and then he's able to vault up. And with OG, his spin move, he likes to use that. And it's a great move. I mean, I got nothing against spin moves. Let's make that very clear. Pascal Siakam is great. Jimmy Butler is great. OG Anunoby's is great, but he gets off balance quite a bit. And I wonder if he has to do yoga or something like that, because
Yeah. I can't prescribe anybody yoga. It would be more hypocritical than, you know, most of the things I already say, which are hypocritical because I can't move. But, you know, I think we've seen at times, like especially the beginning of his career, balance was an issue when he was on the move. It was like, OG's like driving in transition. Is he going to fall down? Like, is he going to be able to get a shot up? And like slowly he's made progress there, but you know, footwork in the post is a whole different thing. And, you know, in some ways you think it should be easier because you're not coming with that head of speed, but there's also, you know, far more physicality and far more bumping you're taking in that area.
Less space.
Yeah. And, you know, OG's, we've seen OG's, you know, calves, and he should be able to anchor himself pretty well. But it's a specific kind of balance. And, you know, with the right training and the right mindset, and there's, again, no indication that he doesn't, you know, have the right priorities in terms of improving himself, he'll get there or he'll get as close as he can. So, you know, I think he's going to, OG is going to be fine.
He's going to be very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I remember talking about this with Zach Lowe, like, does he make an all-star team in his career? Like, I bet no. I think I would still kind of hedge that way. But, like, I think we're looking at, you know, a guy who can be a top between, like, the 30th and 50th best player in the league, and maybe that's underselling him, right? Like, but I think, like, there's no reason he can't be a beyond a good starter on a good team. There's no reason he can't be a very valuable piece. He's already been a very valuable piece on a very good team. So, like, to become a slightly bigger piece on a team that's just as good as the bubble Raptors were, like, I totally believe that's possible, if not probable.
Yeah. OG is going to be fine. Just like you said, it's very rare for a player to have his best stretch of the season at the beginning of the season, but that's kind of how it went for OG. Unfortunately, like, because of all the injuries.
Yeah. And like Pascal Siakam was out, and Scotty Barnes, like we went into the season, like, is Scotty Barnes going to start? Like, that, those were the questions. It was sort of like Pascal's breakout most improved year, like, where it was him and Anunoby, like, which guy's going to be the fifth starter? And, you know, Anunoby had a very unfortunate personal year in addition to injuries that season. So, like, he had a clear, like, I'm number one or 1A role with Fred VanVleet at the start of the season. And, that went away, and then he hurt his calf, and you know, these things are, you know, I hate to use this because it's such like a coach or executive, you know, executive speak, like these things are fluid. Like if you don't have that, you know, multi-time all-NBA all-star guy, you're gonna bend toward whatever's working for you. And I think the best version of the Raptors is probably, at least next year, is probably going to be pretty damn egalitarian in terms of the top four. Maybe Trent, if you want to continue, count him, but certainly in a different type of way. And, you know, I don't think there's a huge reason why Ananobi's usage, if not like right to the level of Siakam, can't be fairly close.
And it would probably get a better version of Fred throughout the season if his usage goes down. And now Scottie Barnes, OG, and Pascal are taking on more of the bulk of that, but they got to be ready for that moment. And so for OG, handle, footwork, Jimmy Butler post game, that kind of stuff, and continue to be yourself, right? Just keep on doing you. He had a tremendous offseason last year, and he was playing great basketball when he got hurt initially. So
yeah, I think it's important, like, just to put a bookend on this conversation, like, growing normally. He it's not like his progress has stalled out or anything. It's going fine. Like, he's not in a situation in which, like, he can, you know, he's a lottery pick on a bad team. Like, he's not in that role. He's in a role in which he has been asked to go from, you know, very small offensive role on a good team. And aside from the Tampa Tank season, like, that, you know, they have remained good, and his role has gradually increased. So, you know, the efficiency hasn't hugely dipped at any one point, and he's figuring it out. Like, it's going fine. It's understandable if he and Raptors fans would like to see it, you know, move a bit quicker. And the Raptors offense certainly could use more efficiency at a higher volume from not just him, but, like, it's not like he hasn't stalled out as a prospect or player. Like, he's already a very good NBA player.
One of the best contracts in the NBA, you might say, because of how good he is and how productive he is at $18 million and a couple of years. I'm sure he's going to get himself a very, very big raise. But Fred VanVleet, and I believe it was you once again who asked Masai Ujiri at his end of season, you know, what do you love about Fred VanVleet, and why is he important to the Raptors? And is it kind of a goal? Maybe it's two different questions, but is it a goal to find guard depth during the offseason, so essentially you don't break down Fred? And he gave you one of those corrects. What do you think Fred VanVleet's future is with the Toronto Raptors?
I don't have the numbers right in front of me. Starting on July 1st, the Raptors can offer him a 3 or 4 year contract extension, and that depends on whether he opts in or opts out of his 23-24 contract, which I think is worth about $22 million or something like that. And basically the extension can start at 125% or 120% of his previous salary. Either way, you're looking at, you know, it's either 1 + 4 or 2 + 3, and you're looking at locking him up for an extra, you know, including this coming season, which he's already under contract for, 5 years, which will take him to 32 or 33. I think it's a deal that the Raptors should have, and I know there are conflicting views about this because fans just saw VanVleet break down. I think they shouldn't hesitate to make him that offer. He's an all-star. He's a plus on both ends. And they also have the type of players around him who can theoretically lessen the offensive load to better leverage what he does well on defense. Because we saw what it looked like when he wasn't at his defensive best in the playoffs. Tyrese Maxey was going crazy. And like Tyrese Maxey is, you know, I think of that line from Superbad, like, that's the fastest kid alive. And nobody can stay in front of him. But Van Vliet, you know, for as many long, versatile defenders that the Raptors have, you still sort of want those smaller guys who can get around screens a bit more easily, who can, you know, pressure a bit more easily. And he certainly has that value, as well as, you know, sure, the obvious off ball. You don't see me coming, big man. I'm taking the ball from you. So I think the Raptors are well set up to pay Fred VanVleet what would work out to about 25% of the salary cap to start, which is not for nothing. Basically what his last deal was, the 4-year, $85 million with a player option deal, it started at about 22 or 23% of the salary cap. The salary cap goes up, players get paid more. So we don't, it's best not to get fixated on the raw numbers here. The question, and more so, becomes, does Van Vliet sign that? I don't know if you want to ask anything based on that, but I'm more skeptical about whether he signs it than they are open to offering him either the full 3 or 4 years in terms of that extension possibility.
Yeah, Freddie's an interesting one because I feel like, you know, with the way the season ended for him, I think a lot of people forgot what kind of player he was. I remember Monty Williams in like January, and he was saying, you know, there's not too many players who are playing better than Fred VanVleet. This is Monty Williams, who's a great coach who has Chris Paul as his point guard. And he's saying this about Fred VanVleet. And he was just coming off that game where he went off against Utah in that amazing third quarter, 37 points, 10 and 10, triple-double. Yes, you know, lately, all we've seen of Fred VanVleet is just his injured version. And we haven't seen who he truly is in many, many months. And that's just kind of the on-court aspect where we don't know. He hasn't reached the ceiling yet, and there's still lots more to go. During his end of season, he talked a lot about feeling kind of a pressure that he has to, you know, do what he did this year, but he has to do it even better next year because he felt like there was a target on his back. That's just him talking about himself. This is his internal motivation that he finds in himself, and this is what's got him here. So it's difficult not to bet on him to continue to exceed expectations and to continue to improve. And as you said, like, it's great to have like all the 6A players across the board, but there are things that smaller players can do, and screen navigation is one of them. Like, bigger guys just can't do it the same way that a Fred VanVleet can. We're talking about, you know, the Warriors and Celtics series. Marcus Smart's going to be very important in that series because of his screen navigation. Derek White, once again, different heights, but very important because of their screen navigation. If you can't get around the pick and roll, which is such a huge part of NBA offenses now, your defense is behind the eight ball, and he is an on the point of attack defender. He's one of the best at it. And then that's just like the basketball side. Then there's like the leadership side. It's a really difficult thing to come to terms with, the idea that, you know, some people feel like he is replaceable when he offers so much intangibles on the court, off the court, that it's very hard to replace it.
Yeah, I mean, I've sung his praises as a human and as a leader plenty. I don't know how much we need to talk about. Like, it's one of those things you can't really know how much it matters unless you're there in that locker room. I can only take people at their word. And, you know, you talk to any Raptor, you talk to the coaches, you talk to the front office, or like, this guy, you know, people feed off him. People listen to him, and, you know, more than he's willing to be heard too. Like we heard how much Pascal Siakam sort of had to teach himself to, you know,
not be weird
and how it didn't come naturally to him. It's not a problem with Fred VanVleet. This is, you know, how he sort of was within his own sort of peer group by the time he came to Toronto, every step he's gone. So, like, you know, you don't want to get too hung up on those things because, you know, DeMar DeRozan was also, you know, a more vocal, really great leader. And ultimately, if there's some grand upgrade available, like, great, thanks, Fred. But, you know, we'll take the, you know, 7-time All-Star or whatever the deal is. But, like,
sure.
But you know, failing that, like, these things do matter, and I don't think you can overlook them. And again, my question is he still betting on himself? Does he look at the offseason of 2023, which as of now, and there's a whole offseason before that, has about like half of the teams able to offer $30 million to a player. Yeah. That number will go down because teams will do things. Teams will commit to players. But, you know, first of all, there's no ticking time bomb on the offer. Like, he can accept it on July 1st. He can accept it on, you know, June 22nd. I believe he can accept it on June 22nd, 2023, if he wants. So, that's not to say the Raptors would still be offering it necessarily, but there's little reason to think it wouldn't be an offer that stands. And beyond that, if you're his agent, and you're like, well, all these teams are going to have this money, and maybe you're not target number one, but if you're target number eight, you're in damn good shape to make a lot of money. And, you know, we've seen, you know, his sort of, you know, if you want to look at Kyle Lowry, and I think it's a bit overdone, but like he only got some of his best years were after 30. And I don't want to bet it all, but I would lean toward Van Vliet continuing to find more and more ways to impact the game, not fewer ways.
And I think fans, they tend to look at numbers quite a bit when it comes to salary cap and luxury tax. And do you enter it? Do you not? I'm not sure if everyone fully understands how the luxury tax works, because they think that you just spend to a certain amount, then you enter the luxury tax. But there's a system in place where you have to, you know, earn your way to the luxury tax. And you pointed this out in one of your recent articles. Do you care to explain to the people in most layman terms possible, the idiot's version of this is, how does the luxury tax work and why can't everyone go in whenever they want?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like too much of a know-it-all, because I'm not. Like, I still need
you to change your voice, though. I heard you say
I still need to go to cbafaq.com as well. Shout out to Larry Kuhn. But there is the, like, not necessarily for the Raptors, but in past years, it's like, this team won't spend. Why don't they just spend into the luxury tax? It's like, well, the main way you can spend into the luxury tax is by re-signing your own players through bird rights. Bird rights being the ability to spend the Larry Bird exception, if that's what you want to call it. The ability to go beyond the salary cap to re-sign your own player. That's the easiest and simplest way. And that's why when there are teams building with young cores, I remember a while ago, it was Portland. Like, this is probably, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, but it was also Oklahoma City. If you look at the James Harden contract or the James Harden trade, like, part of the reason that it was so contentious is not that the Thunder were necessarily unwilling to go into the tax to pay Harden, but it was certainly a smaller market that had to really, really consider it. So eventually, if you're fortunate to draft or acquire a bunch of really good players and they develop into starters or all-stars or somewhere in between, if you got five or six of those guys and you pay them at market value, it's really, really hard, which you can do via bird exceptions generally. It is very difficult to stay under the luxury tax while also having a modicum of depth. Now, there are other ways you can do that. You can do it via trade exceptions. We don't need to go through it. But the point is, Fred VanVleet can be a free agent as soon as 2023. Pascal Siakam, 2024. Precious Achiuwa, 2024, Gary Trent, 2023, Scottie Barnes, 2025, I believe, OG 2024. So if you want it, like, those are, you know, there are different tiers there, but those are the six sort of central pieces to this. If you pay all of those guys starter plus money, so, you know, somewhere above the mid-level exception and up to the max, which Siakam is currently getting, you're almost guaranteed to be paying the luxury tax. So that goes back to the, oh, maybe the Raptors would move OG Anunoby for younger pieces, because those are just like, they can get 85% of the production at half the cost or something like that. Like, at some point you have to do that math, and it's not this summer. Like, that's not the question this summer for the Raptors, because there are none of those six guys is up for an extension, but they have to think, how long term are we going to pay Chris Boucher? How long term are we going to pay whoever we can get on the mid-level exception? Because when you have to, when, if and when you want to pay Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. those next contracts, if you have added guaranteed money to the books, that's when you have to start thinking, do I need this guy? Can I move him around? Is ownership willing to pay a luxury tax that the more years you're in it in a row, the more punitive it becomes? So those are, and that's why I said it will sort of be a, what they do on those contracts, and I'm talking about Boucher, maybe Thad Young, and if they use all of the mid-level exception, those contracts will be a bellwether toward what they want to do in the future with their, you know, more core players.
And then we can get the Messiah Bobby answer. We are evaluating.
We're evaluating, and like I joked in one of my articles, if you hear Bobby Webster saying flexibility a lot, like, I'm guessing
that's the other one.
They've given up. They've given like a 1 year contract with like a partial guarantee in year two or something like that. That's sort of the way I would predict it, because like, I make fun of them saying, you know, flexibility, but that's probably the most prudent way to go forward. But the thing that goes against that is the aforementioned relative parity of this league. Like, you think Scotty Barnes is going to blow up and be an all-star, if not this season, the next season, and you think Pascal Siakam can maintain that play, and OG Anunoby can take a step, and Fred VanVleet is going to be this good. Like, why aren't you a championship contender? Why aren't you like one of the last four teams standing? Yeah. And that's the type of team you want to pay the luxury tax for, because like, yeah, the Raptors went into the luxury tax 1 year in the last 20 years and they won the title. That's nice, but that's not the way it usually works. Like, usually you have to pay the tax a bunch of times and you get luck, not lucky, but things fall right, and you take advantage one of those times. And the Raptors, I mean, we've revisited the Kawhi Leonard trade enough, but the Raptors made their big chance count. Generally, you need several kicks at the can before things line up correctly.
A team like Golden State, like, they live in the luxury tax for many years now. And when the Kevin Durant sign and trade happened, they did the sign and trade because of what we're talking about. They wanted to maintain that max salary spot because that's very valuable, and they wanted to make sure they can contend for many years. So D'Angelo Russell happened, and then that didn't work. And then Andrew Wiggins happened, and here we are. So
yeah, and they like even last year, which ended up being a play in and out team.
Yeah.
They paid Kelly Oubre, or acquired Kelly Oubre for like, I think he was on like a $10 million deal that ended up costing them like, you know, many times that in real money because of the progressive tax that only gets more punitive the further you go into it. So it's Golden State, there are a few cases like that. Like, Steve Ballmer doesn't care how much money he's spending each year. You know, the hedge fund billionaires in Golden State don't care. Most teams aren't like that. I wouldn't expect a team controlled by like publicly traded companies like Bell and Rogers to be like that. But, you know, Milwaukee is a team that's been, has gone to willing to pay into the tax many years in a row. And this is something that the Raptors have, and like, they are thinking about it, but they're going to have to really confront if things go as they hope they do and that development really continues. If things don't go as they hope they will, it's less of a concern.
Exactly.
But and then we're talking, you know, how many assets could we get for these, you know, pretty good but not good enough 29-year-old players?
Yeah, right. That's kind of it. And with Fred, I mean, he's already shown that he can be a major piece on a championship team. And then you have Pascal and OG, you can put them all in that same tier. And so you have those players already. And now you're trying to build around that. And when it comes to the luxury tax, when do you spend into it? When do you not? I mean, I just think people kind of worry about it a little bit too much because they're going to make the call at the right time. Like probably right now isn't it because of the fluctuation that we saw this past season. You just don't have a really good idea of what the Raptors are going to be going forward.
And they can't. They can't spend it into it this year. Yeah. So it's not
And that's the other part too. Yeah, exactly. But going forward, like you're talking about, the opportunities are going to come, and then how they decide to approach it with, you know, the mid-level exception and things of that nature, it's going to be more revealing than any words, any flexibility or evaluating words that comes out of the out of the mouths of Masai and Bobby, because that's going to really show what they're feeling like with this core that they got here.
Absolutely. It's what people do that really shows who they are. And you know, there's no reason not to have faith in that group. They've been, you know, more hits than misses, certainly. Not perfect, but, you know, they're prudent. And like, I really, whether you like it or not, I think Masai Ujiri is still leaning toward playing the long game here and slow playing this until he has seen more to know which way he should go. And until then, just like as you brought up in the Kyle and DeMar years, it's let's give these guys a platform. Let's see what they can do. Yeah. And they're going to tell us what to do, basically.
Remember Vince Carter, patience is a virtue. Final question for you, Eric, as we're talking about money and upgrades and stuff like that, free agents. We don't know how active the Raptors are going to be in the free agent market because of the plethora of players that they're banking on will have great development off seasons, and maybe they can help with some of their deficiencies in shooting and guard depth and so forth. But are there a couple of names that come to mind for you where you think, that could be interesting? He could fit pretty well.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're looking at the mid-level exception here, unless there's some complicated sign and trade. I sort of discussed the DeAndre Ayton bit in an article. And so let's rule that out, because that's a whole another 15 minutes probably. but if they're just using the mid-level exception beyond, and let's not necessarily think, oh, okay, this guy won't come for 1 year, or this guy needs like 4 years guaranteed and the Raptors will or won't do that. Because then we're getting into people's head who we can't predict. But like some names that jump up to me, like for a big Bobby Portis, who is a player option, some people really didn't like that when I suggested it. And I'm like, this guy can hit shots. He's super physical. He's maybe not defending out on the perimeter, but he can do enough there to be competent and doesn't really hem you into a specific style.
Yeah.
And like, he's as annoying as he is to play, he's fun to have on your team. He's nasty. Like him and somebody joked to me, him and Pascal Siakam will have the and one crew, like after they take any shot. So like, he's my favorite sort of quasi big on the market. I also like Isaiah Hartenstein as a younger guy from the Clippers. If you just want to go like pure shot blocker, maybe you're looking at somebody like Mitchell Robinson, who I'm less crazy about, but, you know, does provide that element of rim protection that they don't have. There's one other name that if you want to go to restricted, you can go Mo Bamba. I know that's a name that's been circulating.
Trendy, yeah.
I do like him. It's hard, you know, Orlando is such like has been such a mess for the last few years. It's hard to know how to rate his play properly, other than to say he certainly hasn't been the answer, but you know, he's not the lone reason for that. So those are sort of the bigs that I'd look at in terms of wing players at that mid-level price. I believe Pat Connaughton has a player option as well that he can opt out of. He's a guy I've liked his game a lot. Probably doesn't have the creation that you want from that role, but like the mid-level isn't this huge, huge weapon that you're going to be able to get the best free agent on the planet. You know, Tyus Jones would be fun, but I think will probably be a bit out of their range as like a true point guard to back up Fred VanVleet. Malik Monk as a guy who's like first and foremost a shooter, but does have that, you know, secondary creation. He sort of strikes me as like the name that was sort of circling at the trade deadline that I loved for the Raptors was Bogdan Bogdanovic, because he's sort of like that, like great shooter, but if the ball swung to him, he can make a play for other people or for himself. And I think like that's the type of guy the Raptors really need. Bogdanovic has more size than Monk. I do like Monk as a potential fit. I think he'll be in a lot of teams' wish list for the reasons I've just laid out. So I think those are a few names that jump out. They could go cheaper, they could go younger. In terms of like just pure veterans, like Otto Porter, Gary Harris, like I like those guys as, you know, guys I wouldn't want to commit to long term, but like guys who I'd love to have around for a year or a year and like a partially guaranteed second year.
Sure.
So those are sort of the names that jump out.
I love very similar names, but there are a few that stuck out to me that I want to get your thoughts on it. So Bryn Forbes, what are your thoughts on Bryn Forbes?
I mean, he's pretty one-dimensional. He'll exploitable defensively for sure. Nice, awesome shooter. If you can get him for like the biannual exception for like $4 million, that's not like a terrible use of that, I would say. If you're paying more than that, I probably don't love it. But if it's only on a one-year deal, depending on what else you can do, I think he's, you know, certainly a skill that the Raptors need more of, his perimeter shooting, and he can provide that. I just don't think he's giving you. If he's filling a playoff role, you're probably in trouble.
Yes, fair enough. Now, this is a name that you might laugh at. People might laugh at it, but hear me out with this one. JaVale McGee.
I do not laugh at that. I think, like, again, you don't want to give him the full mid-level. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you're committed to playing smaller, whether, you know, that includes Precious or not, like five of those six guys that – you know, we're talking about are your starters. McGee is like a really, you know, great rim deterrent. I think he had I was looking this up yesterday. I think there were only three or four players who faced more than 200 shots or defended more than 200 shots within 6 feet of the rim who held opponents to a lower shooting percentage. So he allows you to play a different way, maybe a more traditional way that's more, that even if you have to keep your key guys minutes up and hopefully they can be lowered a little bit,
sure,
maybe you can mix in some less demanding schemes that help you protect the paint, which is the Raptors' priority, through other means other than, you know, switching on everything or helping and rotating like hell. And so to have an option of a rim protector who is still like also a, you know, certainly a lob threat. I don't hate it. And, you know, Masai Ujiri has, I believe, traded for him. I think he traded in Denver.
Tea leaves
for JaVale McGee. I don't think that was one of his, you know, top five moves or anything like that. But he doesn't not like him or at least didn't a decade ago.
All you need is one link, right?
Yeah,
just like the LA Lakers.
Yeah, obviously.
Just like the LA Lakers, right?
Yeah, he did it a decade ago, so he still believes it fully. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people think of him as like a Shaq and the Fool King, but he is a person who's gone through the Phoenix Suns organization, the Golden State Warriors organization. He's learned a lot in his
past couple
years. On the
Lakers, like I think, was he on that championship team? I think he...
You know what? I think he was, actually. Yeah, he's an NBA champion.
Yeah. So he's a useful NBA, like he's a useful regular season player who like can give you some, you know, 5 or 10 minutes in the play. Again, like not a guy you're probably relying on a ton in a playoff series, but he's definitely good for regular season depth. And not only like in terms of numbers, but in terms of stylistic diversity.
Lob threat too. Sure, you could use some of that in the half court. That would be very nice. And he's
vertical spacing. Yeah.
Ooh, beautiful. That's a good one. That's a trendy word. Vertical spacing. That's what the Raptors are all about. Vertical spacing. Yeah. Love it. How about This is my last one for you, then I'll let you go. Thanasis Antetokounmpo.
two thirds of the way there. He's coming home. Danforth got ready.
Exactly. Right. That is the plan. You just get him from the ground and then you lure them in slowly but surely.
Well, if we're judging by Scotty Barnes' Instagram stories, it's got all the spacing they need.
There you go, right? I just did a video, people, by the way, on what has changed about Scotty Barnes' jumper, because it looks a little bit different. I'm not saying that he is now going to be, Ray Allen, Klay Thompson, but I will say that there has been some mechanical changes that are alluring at, a bit more of a sustainable form that could help him this season. But again, empty gym shots, edited clips, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But 50, the form does it better.
You're calling a 50-40-90 season. So exactly. we've heard it here first.
Yes. Anything coming out recent or soon?
Yeah, this week coming, I'll sort of have as I alluded to it earlier, how the Raptors can improve their sort of skill deficits, either through internal improvement through free agency and through the draft, the 33rd pick, which we didn't talk much about today, thankfully, because that is sort of a spot where I've done a little bit of work, but I'm still getting more and more associated. As the draft comes, I think it's June 23rd, you can already read my sort of 9 alluring names to look for, but maybe we'll get more granular with that. And then, nothing huge in the works, although, some things for down the road that I'm hoping to get off the ground. But certainly draft coverage and certainly free agent coverage, because, it's not going to be anything that wows people, whatever they do this offseason. But I don't think, unless there's some huge trade, which again, I'm not predicting, but I do think it will be quite telling what they do as for the future direction of that franchise. And as somebody who's trying to, always stay pretty macro.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
While analyzing the micro, I'm pretty intrigued by what's going to go down.
And we won't hear a word from the Raptor franchise about why they made a move either. We'll just have to rely on people like us to tell you why they did this, because you have to know how to navigate the Raptors' verbiage with the moves that they make, because they aren't going to tell you too much about it. Okay, Eric, thank you so much, sir, for joining me. Have yourself a great weekend. All the best, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.